This is the ESPNU College Football Podcast. Your host today, Ivan Maisel.
Hello and welcome to the January 26th edition of the ESPNU College Football Podcast. This is Ivan Maisel, senior writer at ESPN.com, and I am joined live from Pittsburgh, PA, by my good friend, the college football guru and historian, Beano Cook. Beano, how are you?
Cold? Yeah, well, it's cold here, as it is. It's always cold in Bristol.
Yes, yeah.
Once October 1st arrives, you're in trouble.
Not a lot of resort traffic here. I think that's why the real estate was cheap.
Yeah, so, again, it's good to be back and doing it every other week. I love it.
Good. Well, you know, oddly enough, Beano, when last we spoke on January 12th, Urban Meyer was pretty much retired. And now, apparently, he says he's going to be around for spring practice.
Well, that means, in my opinion, he's going to be there in the fall.
Yes, yeah. It's
my opinion. And people say I'm wrong, I didn't say he would be the next coach at Michigan if it's a change. What I said is, if he doesn't coach at Florida again, and I think if he didn't coach this coming year, I don't think he's going to coach again at Florida. My prediction is someday he would end up at Michigan. It would be his next stop if things didn't work out for Rodriguez this year. But I always felt that he would be coaching there this fall, but I think he is now. He's at spring practice. He's going to be there in the fall.
You know, what strikes me, Beano, is that we're watching a guy have his midlife crisis in public. And I am, you know, I have had discussions with my friends and colleagues in our business who, you know, say, well, what is the deal with this guy? And I'm reluctant to criticize him because, you know, this is his life and his business. And you know, he's trying to work through figure out what he wants to do and how he wants to do it. And, you know, hey, whatever floats his boat, I'm fine with.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
We've all had a midlife crisis.
Yes.
I mean, it's part of, when you're in your 40s, it happens. You wonder, what's going on here? Am I going to do this the rest of my life? No, I now think, if I had to bet even money, he would be the coach at Florida this fall.
Oh, I think there's no question at this point. And
Brad.
Yeah, you know, he's talking as if he's going to be there in the spring.
Yeah.
The recruits have lined up behind him. Florida has a class with signing date next week. Evidently has a class that many people are regarding as spectacular. So he is coming back, and you know, I think it always makes the sport more fun when you have a marquee coach like that, and the fact that he has stared reality in the face and come to a decision that he does still want to coach, and you know, this might be a deal like Mike Krzyzewski, who had this sort of crisis in the mid-90s at Duke and walked away for half a season and came back as strong as ever.
Yeah, and plus the Saban Urban Meyer rivalry is going to be great. They're not going to play every year, but they play the next 2 years.
They play in Tuscaloosa this year,
and that game will be, I predict, in prime time on CBS. They get to do one prime time game a year in the SEC. That will be the game this year.
And I can't imagine that it wouldn't be. Alabama, of course, 10 days ago on Saturday the 16th, had a celebration at Bryant-Denny Stadium. 38,000 people came to celebrate the national championship. And that's pretty astounding for the middle of January, even in northwest Alabama.
Definitely. Everybody who lives north of the Mason-Dixon line thinks it's all 70 degrees in Georgia and Alabama and the panhandle in Florida. It isn't that way. Yeah, that's amazing. I don't think it's as amazing as 92,000 that one year in the spring game.
3 years ago, Saban's first spring game.
I think it's amazing. 38,000. I mean, it's unbelievable. What do you think it would have been like if they had won at Gettysburg?
You know, I don't think Bryant-Denny Stadium had been built then. I'm going to check that and get back to you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Bino, you talked about midlife crisis in your 40s, and as of today, I have to say I remember my 40s because today is my 50th birthday. And the reason I bring that up is I thought it was a good opportunity, especially in the off season, to kind of step back and look at great coaches when they were 50 years old and where they were in their career. And of course, you reminded me the first thing out of your mouth yesterday when I brought this up was that about Rockne.
Yeah, he died in 1931 in a plane crash.
Yeah.
He was born in 1888.
So he never saw 50.
No, he never saw even, did not even come close.
No, and Frank Leahy had been long retired by age 50.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, he graduated from Notre Dame in 31, and his last season at Notre Dame was 1953. Yeah, when you reach 50, Ivan, I'm going to give you a little piece of advice.
Okay.
When I reached 50 a number of years ago, I realized I was a lot closer to the tomb and the womb. You know, I mean, when you're 50, you begin to, they used to have a saying, and the first time I ever heard this was when I worked at CBS. When you reach 50, you're playing the back nine.
Yeah.
And I'm now 78. I'm on the putting green at 18. I have to be honest.
Not a very good putter.
The other point is you're closer, you begin to realize your professional career, you can see the end of it. I mean, it's only 15 years away. And before you know it, you'll be 65. But knowing you, you're still going to be predicting the wrong team to win the National.
Well, it's good to hang on to those qualities that have made your career what it is.
Yeah, the thing about 50, it's amazing. Paterno just keep. He was born in 1926.
1976. He was 10 years away from his first national championship.
I had coaching job at Penn State until his late 30s. That's what's amazing with all these wins. He's going to reach 400 next year.
Yes. And Bobby Bowden.
But you're right. I mean, Leahy and Rockne. I mean, you look at Rockne and you see pictures of Rockne, you think he was 60.
Well, back then, of course, the people, they didn't take care of themselves or didn't know how. And, I look at Bobby Bowden, who just turned 80 30 years ago, 1979. He'd had his first undefeated season. That was the first time Florida State made a big splash, and then lost in the Orange Bowl to Oklahoma. So he was just getting started. Paterno in 1976 they were still considered an Eastern power, not really the same as the big boys. So. And then Bear Bryant, I think, turned 50 in 1963. By then, it was just two years removed from his first national championship. Of course, the other point about Bryant in January 26th, which, of course, I would remember having grown up in Alabama and this being my birthday, is that he died on January 26th, 1983, my 23rd birthday.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I remember when he was 70. And he was on the air with Keith Jackson doing a game and talking about it with Frank Broyles. And Keith Jackson said, how does he do it? I think it was either Broyles or Darryl Royal. And I don't know who it was said, he's just tougher than the rest of us. And that's what he was. Brian was tough.
Yeah.
He grew up during the Great Depression. He knew what it's like to scramble. And he said, I went to Alabama, I didn't want to go back home.
Nothing to go back home to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Bear Bryant's amazing. I mean, he's still, to me, amazing. And Paterno and even Bobby Bowden, they pushed him out. But you're 50, you're good for 30 more years.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so. Bino, another piece of news this week, the BCS announcing that they had doled out their money, and with great fanfare announced a record $24.5 million were going to the five non-automatic qualifying conferences. That's about $5 million more than they got last year, and the BCS was very proud of this, the largesse, and yet in the same release they point out that you know, the SEC and the Big Ten each got $22 million apiece for their own conferences.
Because they each had two teams in the BCS.
That's correct.
Games, and that is why they don't want a Mountain West team in it. Because they know eventually Notre Dame's going to be good. And if Notre Dame wins 10 games, they get a BCS bid.
More or less.
So that will leave only three openings instead of four. And if you had the Mountain West, that's eight taken. So that's why they're trying to keep the Mountain West out. But you and I both agree, I think we do, that they should be an automatic. Am I right? Do you agree on that?
I do agree. And what I am concerned about, looking down the road, and they won't make that decision until after the 2011 season, I believe, is, you know, do they give the Mountain, and they have criteria that the Mountain West has to meet, and it has to do with the average rating for their teams over a four-year period, but it's a specific four-year period. So the Mountain West, you know, the fact that the Mountain West was good, has been good for really four consecutive years at this point, if not more, is not relevant. It's got to be the exact four-year period that the BCS measures, which I don't really understand that either, but be that as it may, the Mountain West Conference gets a bid. What happens to, will the Big East continue to qualify under the same criteria? And if not, then what happens to the Big East? And perhaps we shouldn't worry about it. If they qualify, they qualify, and they don't, they don't. But, a conference is just not as healthy if they, you know, and not as vibrant and not as strong if they don't have an automatic BCS bid. So
that kills recruiting.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's going to be something we're all going to watch. But I thought it was a little, you know, as an old saying, especially where I come from, with the BCS trumpeting this $24 million to be spread among the five conferences, you know, and how great that was, is, you know, don't pee down my leg and tell me it's raining. You know, I don't think that's, they're not treating those conferences the same, no matter how much, you know, how much a greater increase they get, and not treating them, I think, equitably. So, I just wanted to bring that up.
Good.
And now I have. Now, Beano, we had spectacularly poor timing with our last show, in that within hours of having posted it, the world exploded at Tennessee and at USC with Lane Kiffin, the former USC coach, the former Oakland Raider coach, became the former Tennessee coach and scrammed back to L.A. to take over the Trojans for Pete Carroll. Now that the dust has begun to settle, to coin a phrase, I made that up myself, and we have a little perspective, what are your thoughts about Lane Kiffin and what's happened?
Well, I think he's going to win, but not enough. It's not going to win enough.
Is there anybody you think that could have replaced Carroll and kept up that, you know, level of victories?
Well, you should know who I'm going to say. Al Golden from Temple. Great recruiter, excellent coach, and has a track record.
Yes.
I mean, he won nine straight at Temple, and somebody said they don't play anybody. I said they won at Navy, and they're playing the same team since he came that they played before he got there. And they didn't win those games that many times. I don't understand it.
I don't understand how anybody could question the feat of winning nine games at Temple.
In a row.
Yeah, in a row. You're absolutely right. And
I mean, he lost to Villanova. I know that. They bring that up.
Yes.
And Notre Dame. I mean, and Penn State.
But Villanova was a player two away from being the FCS champion, and those teams can play.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, if they jumped on top of UCLA in the Eagle Bank Bowl and then just slowly got worn down, really, by a talent difference, if nothing else. So, yeah, Al Golden, one of the big surprises is that he did not, in both our minds, did not move on this year, and perhaps it's a credit to him that he's just going to continue to build there until he sees a job he likes, and he's not going to just grab something because it.
Well, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. But he would have grabbed USC, or he would have grabbed Tennessee.
Yes.
Yeah, and a lot of people thought he would get the Virginia job, but the AD hired the coach from Richmond, and that's his right. But you're not going to win big at Virginia on a consistent basis. Al Groh got a job right at he's with Georgia Tech.
He moved to Georgia Tech to become defensive coordinator for Paul Johnson, which I think is a real coup.
Oh yeah,
for Paul Johnson, and frankly, I'm stunned. It just proves Al Groh is a lifer. I mean, here's a guy that, you know, went to school at Virginia, was so excited to be back at Virginia, left honorably. I mean, he was fired, but he had nothing. He
yes.
took the high road as he left, much to his credit. And you're thinking, you know, who doesn't want to retire to Charlottesville? But evidently, Al Groh did not. He is back in the game, and you know, it's one of those deals where I'm assuming that Paul Johnson will send the young guys out to recruit. He'll just leave Al Groh back there to draw up O's to stop the X's, and it should be a great success.
Yeah, definitely stop the X's at Georgia Tech. I mean, at Georgia.
Well, and speaking of Georgia, we kind of glossed over the fact that the son of Georgia legend Vince Dooley is now the new coach at Tennessee, Derek Dooley, coming in from Louisiana Tech. And you know, it's so funny now, Beano, the way that the media works. You know, the afternoon, as the word leaked on the internet that Derek Dooley was coming to Tennessee, the Tennessee fans howled. This guy has a losing record. He's 17-20. What are we doing hiring a guy from Louisiana Tech? And then they met Derek Dooley, and he not only won the press conference, he killed the press conference. He's a smart guy. He's actually an attorney. Joins Rick Neuheisel as an attorney and head coach.
That's a minus, in my opinion.
But it does indicate a little bit of intellect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Louisiana Tech was a good team. They were a tough team. Boise State had the greatest trouble this year with certainly within the WAC, playing at Louisiana Tech this year, won a 10-point victory. Derek Dooley, I believe, is a good coach, and I think...
Yeah, smart move.
Yeah, it's a smart move, and what struck me was that as wildly uneven and crazy as Lane Kiffin's 12 months were in Knoxville, Derek Dooley just came in, and... there was just this feeling of, hey, this guy knows what he's doing. He understands us. You know, he grew up in the SEC. Now, granted, if his name were Derek Mazel or Derek Cook, you know, he wouldn't get the free pass that he, you know, the immediate acceptance that he gets is Derek Dooley.
Absolutely.
But that's okay. You know, he's proven himself as a head coach, and I think it's going to be fascinating to watch Tennessee and Georgia jockey for that position right behind Florida in the SEC East.
Yeah, Tennessee goes to Georgia. Florida goes to Tennessee early in the year. It's usually the first conference game for both teams, Florida and Tennessee.
And I'm saying that with a long picture because, you know, Lane Kiffin left very little at Tennessee. That was a senior-dominated team, at least the biggest names at Tennessee, and the ones that weren't seniors, Eric Berry, the junior who will be a high draft pick, is gone. Jonathan Crompton, a quarterback, is gone, and he's got some rebuilding to do, Derek Dooley. So it may not happen this year, it may not happen next year, but I think he's a guy that is going to be interesting to watch there for a totally different reason than Lane Kiffin will be interesting to watch at USC.
I think he would be very successful in recruiting. I really do. I really do. I mean, people, Louisiana Tech, I mean, first place, all the big games against the big schools are on the road. They don't come to Louisiana Tech. That's, you know, that's what happens for those teams. They are, you know, the big schools invite them and give them a big check and it's
yes.
Rent a victim. So 17-20, believe me, at Louisiana Tech, believe me, that's not a disgrace.
No, that's worthy of our respect, and,
yes.
And he will be, it's going to be fun to watch him. Beano, I got some emails here, one from Brad Wolf, who is a a teacher and girls basketball coach in Red Deer, Alberta. And Brad guessed that I would mention my birthday today because I said that I had a special announcement in the last show, so he figured that out, and it's his birthday as well. But he said, I just want to say that as a Canadian, it is great to hear about college football all year long. It was tough growing up in Canada as we didn't get a weekly game until we got cable. And when we did, we only got the January 1st bowl games. I know that you and Bino have been beating a dead horse with all this talk about bowl games, a plus one and the like, but what did you prefer more? Games over a long period, like now when they start on December 19th and having half the games before New Year's Day, or those days when there were 10 games on New Year's and you could go to bed knowing that a national champion would be known the next day. Love the podcast. Can't wait until the summer when it comes back full time. So I think we're both big January 1 fans, aren't
we? Yeah, I didn't realize how much the fans would miss what went on in January 1st. I have 10 people a year say they miss January 1st with all the games. Now, what's going to happen in a couple of years, on January 1st, we're going to have two games that mean something. And the winners of those two games will play around January 10th for the national title. But until then, I think Ohio State, Oregon was entertaining and we were interested. But there was something about January 1st. But if you want number one to play number two, if you played it on January 1st, I think that would be a mistake. But next year it's going to be January 10th.
Monday night, January 10th.
They don't want to play on Friday and Saturday because of the low use of sets in use. And Sunday night is a big night for ABC with Desperate Housewives and all those shows. They don't want to go against the CBS shows or anything else. Monday night still isn't easy because of 2.5 Men and CSI Miami. But Monday night,
Mother fans in my house
because of the day of the week it is. So that's why they moved it. January 10th.
That'll be the first weekend of the NFL playoffs, I would think, as well.
And that's the other reason.
I also got an email from Douglas Cotton in Mexico, who said, I've lived in Mexico since 98, and the thing I've missed most was college football coverage. You guys have brought that back via the web, so thank you very much. I love your picks on the January 12th podcast, although USC has to be considered in shambles. With the coaching chaos at Florida and USC, I think that the big programs for the next 5 years will be Texas, Alabama, and Ohio State. What do you think?
Oh, I agree with them, I agree with them. I mean, if Urban Meyer stays at Florida, include Florida.
Yes.
I think SC has problems. You have said they're in trouble with the NCAA. If you had to bet on it, you don't know what the penalties are going to be, but they're going to get hit, aren't they, in your opinion?
I think so, yes, because they've folded in the O.J. Mayo case with the Reggie Bush case, which means that they're aiming at lack of institutional control, and that's how they hit you hard. The hearing for USC is February 19th to 21st, somewhere in there, in Tempe, Arizona. So we should hear some weeks after that. So it will be a spring practice surprise for the Trojans. And we could be wrong. It could be good news, but I grow increasingly skeptical of that.
Yeah, my guess is that they would take away scholarships. If they ban them on TV, that means no USC Notre Dame game.
Yeah,
even at Notre Dame.
Well, they figured out that TV is, it's not an effective penalty. Scholarships is how they hurt people, and that's probably what they'll.
Yeah, well,
what they'll do.
The pocketbook, and the pocketbook hurts.
Yes, that's
true. Don't kid yourself.
Well, but scholarships.
So the coaches at scholarships.
And they turn into losses, which turns into the pocketbook. And they may take the postseason away from them, and that's also a pocketbook issue as well. They did that with Alabama, in the middle of the previous decade. And, of course, we've all seen how that affected Alabama long-term, really hurt them.
Yeah, but the loss of scholarships is what really hit them, right?
Oh yeah, no, I was kidding, but yeah, it did. It Alabama stumbled around until Saban got there, and he came in coinciding with the end of the scholarship limitations working themselves through the system, and it had been a long haul. It was not, you know, we picked teams of the decade on ESPN.com last week, and Alabama was worth no mention at all because it was such a tough decade for them because of the scholarship losses. So, Beano, the birthday calendar, the Hall of Fame birthday calendar, January 30th, Bump Elliott, a player and coach in the Big Ten for many years.
He won a lot of letters in sports at Michigan, I believe. I think he won something like 9 or 10 letters playing. He just didn't play football. If I'm wrong in that, we would get an email. But I'm almost sure he played basketball, and he was quite an athlete.
He really was, and a good coach. Was replaced in the late 60s by Bo Schembechler, who was a better coach. January 31st, Don Hutson, the Alabama end in the 30s.
Yeah, wasn't there some other end who became, who was the other end on that team?
The other end, and became known as the other end in later years, was Paul Bryant.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and both from Arkansas, and Bryant was famous for playing against Tennessee with a broken leg, began his legacy of toughness. Actually, that didn't begin it. That would have begun with wrestling the bear in the 20s as a kid, but just contributed to that legendary toughness that you brought up earlier.
Who gave him the name Bear? Did he have that in high school?
Yeah, he was, I think, 12 or 14 years old, and a traveling circus came to Fordyce, Arkansas, and they give you $1 to wrestle a bear.
And that was a lot of money then.
Oh, yeah. And Bryant got in the ring with the bear, and I'm not sure he ever got the dollar because at one point, if I remember correctly, I think the muzzle came off the bear, and that's when Bear Bryant got out of the ring in a hurry. But nonetheless, he was the other end of Don Hutson, who's
the Rose Bowl beat Stanford.
Yes, they did. I believe 29-13. Is that correct?
Yeah. You got a tell the fans. You have a ticket, a press ticket from that game. Am I correct?
It's not a press ticket. It's a regular seat in the Rose Bowl that I bought on eBay.
How much?
I think I paid. I'm embarrassed to say how much I paid. I think I paid about $100 for it.
I wanted to show.
Yeah.
For how fanatic you are, and we're not going to get impartial reporting in Alabama. I'm just kidding.
Or Stanford.
Would take that seriously with email.
Yeah. Now, the other birthdays I wanted to bring up next week, three remarkable quarterbacks, really from roughly the same generation. February 3rd, Bob Greasy and Fran Tarkington on the same day, and February 5th, Roger Staubach.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Roger Staubach. The only person ever associated with the Navy more famous than Staubach is John Paul Jones. Not convinced that Staubach isn't more famous. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. He wanted to go to Notre Dame. They didn't want him. And he grew up in the Cincinnati area, I believe, and he ended up at Navy. And Ernie, of course, he tells me an interesting story when he was a plebe. They were concerned about his throwing arm, and then Wayne Harden saw it, and he told the assistant coaches, don't mess with it, and they never did.
Wayne Harden, was he the coach at Navy then?
He was an assistant coach. No, he was head coach when he became head coach in 1959.
Okay.
And Roger came in 1961, and I think the coach he told it to him was George Walsh.
Eventually
went to Penn State as an assistant, and then of course went to Navy in Virginia, and I think that's how I know the story. He told that to somebody. They didn't necessarily like his throwing motion, but Wayne Harden sort of don't mess with it. You know, so I think he's going to He's something. He was something special, and of course.
He really is, and he spent this year counseling from afar Colt McCoy at Texas.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, they had an email or phone relationship, I believe, and I think helped him deal with the pressures of celebrity and the pressures of leadership, and clearly did a very good job.
Yeah, excellent job. Yeah, so. Saul Baxbury. You know, very unique person. I talked to Bud Tallman, who was the sports information director at the time, and he saw Roger Staubach. And I said, what was he like? He said he was the same as he was when he was at the academy. He hasn't changed one bit.
That's terrific. And Bud was the one that engineered that Heisman campaign in 1963, was he not?
Yeah, absolutely. He was the SID, and then he went to Buffalo. He had Staubach, O.J. Simpson, and Paterno. And I talked to him a few weeks ago, and I said, you were very good in teaching Staubach how to pass. You were very good in telling Paterno, hey, coach, you're allowed to pass on first down in your own territory. But you failed miserably with Simpson. He said, what do you mean? He said, you go and teach him to drive a Bronco. But Bud Tallman, I feel special toward him because I'm the one when the NFL called me to recommend somebody for the PR job at the Buffalo Bills. I recommended Bud Tallman, and he got the job.
Oh, that's great.
Three-year contract, and at the time, $100,000 for a three-year contract. And
wow.
Bud said, you're making me feel like a number one draft choice. He said that to Ralph Wilson. That story, and Bud won't confirm it one way or the other, so he's going to have to send an email and say it isn't true. I say it is true.
Yeah, sounds good anyway.
Oh.
Well, Beano?
Hold him again. I mean, it's the last Tuesday in January, and the next time we meet him will be a few days away from Valentine's. And I don't want any cards from you.
Oh, well, shucks.
Wrong impression.
What am I going to do with this chocolate I bought then?
I don't know.
Yeah.
None of anything's wrong, as they said in Seinfeld.
That's right.
Yeah. But, again, we will meet on February 9th, correct?
Correct. We will be here then, and we hope everybody joins us. This has been the ESPNU College Football Podcast. For Beano Cook, this is Ivan Maisel. Thanks for downloading us.
We'd like to thank you for listening to today's show. For more great podcasts, check out the Pod Center page at ESPNradio.com.